From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has recused himself from any investigation into Russia's interference in the presidential campaign. What was Sessions doing meeting with the Russian ambassador 2 months before Election Day? And who is this mysterious Russian ambassador who is causing so much trouble for not one, but two senior officials in the Trump White House? It's Friday, March 3rd.
Just to clear up any confusion over this, could you just explain a little bit about the September 8th meeting, who on your staff was there, and what was discussed with the Russian ambassador?
The Russian ambassador apparently sent a staffer to my office, I did not see him, and asked for a meeting, as so many of the ambassadors were doing. And we set up a time, as we did, as we normally did, and we met with him.
That's the account that Attorney General Jeff Sessions gave on Thursday of how it was he came to meet with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kosilyak, on September 8th, 2016. But the reason for that meeting between Sessions, who was then a senator from Alabama, and Kosilyak is now the subject of intense scrutiny since the fact of it was revealed earlier this week.
And, you know, over the years, I've developed a lot of friendships. And some people are good, and some people are okay, and some people are lousy, right?
So at this point, Sessions has very, very publicly become...
My colleague, Matthew Rosenberg, has been reporting on the story.
One of Donald Trump's most prominent surrogates on the campaign trail.
I have a man who's respected by everybody here, greatly respected.
Trump did not have a lot of prominent Republicans right early to his cause. Sessions was one of the earliest.
Senator Jeff Sessions!
So he's endorsed him.
He's endorsed him. He's out speaking for him.
I told Donald Trump, this isn't a campaign. This is a movement. Look at what's happening.
He's been advising Trump on foreign policy since March.
The American people are not happy with their government.
So look, once that happens, ambassadors line up to meet with you because they want to get in with the next administration.
So now we understand why the ambassador would want to meet with Sessions, but why would Sessions want to meet with the Russian ambassador?
That's a lot less clear. You know, Sessions has said as part of his duties, the Armed Services Committee, he was having the meeting. That's not a very common thing for people on the Armed Services Committee to do, to meet with the Russian ambassador. They do meet with a lot of ambassadors from allies with which we have close military relationships, you know, our NATO allies, Japan, Israel. For the Russians, it's different. It's a much more difficult relationship. And the Washington Post, in their reporting, they queried 20 different members of the Armed Services Committee, none of whom said they'd had any meetings with the Russian ambassador in the last year.
Is there anything inherently wrong with a senator, even a campaign advisor to a president, having this kind of a meeting?
Depends on what went on in the meeting. So there's no simple answer on that. And that's, I think, one of the problems here, is that the meeting in itself is no big deal. The fact that you don't want to talk about it, that you try and hide it, that it's only months later does it come out you had the meeting, raises questions about what went on in that meeting.
What else happened on September 8th, the day of this meeting?
So, I mean, there was a lot in the air on that day. You've got
good morning, everyone.
Clinton giving her first press conference in weeks at that point.
Bizarrely, once again, he praised Russia's strongman, Vladimir Putin.
And really about the Putin-Trump kind of accusations, alleging that there's this collusion, there's something untoward here, and that, you know, people need to know about it.
Even taking the astonishing step of suggesting that he prefers the Russian president to our American president.
And then you've also got Trump going on Russia Today.
I don't know who hacked. I'm not sure who. I mean, you tell me who hacked. Who did the hacking? But I have
a Russian network that the American intelligence community believes is entirely a Kremlin-backed propaganda network.
U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies reportedly are investigating whether Russia launched a covert operation to disrupt the 2016 election. What do you make of that?
I think it's probably unlikely. I think maybe the Democrats are putting that out. Who knows? But
there is a lot in the ether about the Trump-Russia questions.
Right. So the intelligence community is starting to pick up this Russian interference. What do they know by or around September 8th, the day of this meeting?
September is sort of a crucial month in all this, and I'm going to step back for a second here. You start in the spring into the summer where you've got different pieces of the intelligence community and the government picking up noises. Then you get...
We have got an extraordinary development occurring as we're talking. WikiLeaks has done a Friday document dump.
WikiLeaks is pushing out emails that have been hacked and stolen from the DNC.
They suggest that DNC employees have plotted in many ways to undercut and undermine Senator Sanders during the primary.
And there are a lot of embarrassing revelations in there.
So you need both a public and a private position, effectively acknowledging everything she says could potentially be the absolute inverse of what she means.
And to old Russia hands in the government, it started to look like this old dirty trick known as kompromat. Started the Soviets. Putin, of course, was a KGB guy. And it's this idea that you take damaging material you have against somebody, maybe a videotape of them with a prostitute or something, and you put it out there to destroy them. And that's what they started to fear what was going on here. But it's not really clear exactly what's going on. The White House is kind of hesitant to get involved. They're like, oh, what is this? We don't really know. But in September is when you start getting cyber attacks against state electoral systems, probing their defenses, sucking up voter rolls. That's also presumed to be Russian by the U.S. government. Once you start getting those attacks on the electoral system, then it's like, okay, maybe they think they really can disrupt the election or at least raise doubts in the public's mind about it.
How much of this would Senator Jeff Sessions have known about and understood?
There's no way he could not have known that the questions were out there, that people were talking about it. I mean, we'd been running front page stories about it. I think in July we may have had one. This was something that was in the news. People were talking about. And so you're having this meeting amid all this, and you know what's going on.
If he knows this, and given he's involved with the Trump campaign himself at this moment, why would he have taken this meeting?
Who knows? I mean, maybe they just were really just having, you know, a polite discussion, just chatting it up and seeing where things could go. But there may be information about that meeting. The U.S. intelligence monitors communications among Russian officials, and I think it's pretty safe to assume that they're doing their best to listen in on the Russian ambassador talking to his colleagues back in Moscow, look at the cables he's sending back to Moscow. And if he described that meeting at all, they will at least have that much. But there may be some insight there. We just don't know it. And honestly, it's incredibly classified. If it exists, we may never actually see it.
All right. So Trump defeats Hillary Clinton and he wins the presidential election. Jeff Sessions is asked to become the U.S. Attorney General.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before this committee will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
And during his confirmation hearing, he's asked a question by Senator Al Franken of Minnesota.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Was that answer from Sessions honest?
In a way, yes, but in a way, no. I mean, the excuse that we've now gotten, now that we know there was a contact, has been, well, they asked me if there were contacts about the campaign thing, and I wasn't meeting with him in my capacity as part of the campaign. That seems awfully lawyerly. I mean, that's the kind of thing my children do to get out of something, or that's Bill Clinton debating what is sexual intercourse, basically.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes. And here's the thing. Ambassadors are lining up to see you if you're Jeff Sessions because of your association with the campaign, not for other reasons. That's why people want to see you. So for Sessions to kind of go out of his way to say, oh, well, we weren't talking about that. It's just, okay, sure, maybe. But then what were you talking about?
So this is all starting to sound a lot like a phone call that, Matt, we talked to you about on this show a few weeks ago, and it involved the exact same Russian ambassador.
Yeah, he was talking to Michael Flynn, who served for 25 days as Trump's national security advisor. When news of those phone calls first emerged later in January, the White House just said, they were just talking about logistics, nothing to look at here, move along. And, you know, a few weeks after that, it emerged that Flynn had lied to the Vice President Pence about what was said on those calls. But there's a bigger issue there that worried many people in the government, which is that if Flynn had actually misled people in the White House about the content of his conversations with Ambassador Kislyak, that's a really big deal. And the Russians would know that because they were on the other end of that call. Mm-hmm. They could then go to Flynn at some point and say, hey, you know, we know you lied. We know you lied to the vice president. So if you don't help us with this, if you don't tell us that, we're going to expose your lie. And that's the kind of thing that is a huge blackmail risk. That's what they're worried about.
Is there a potential, theoretically, for that same problem, for the risk of blackmail here with Sessions and his communications with Kislyak?
Yeah, there are real problems there. Any kind of secret conversation is going to raise red flags. And if they talked about anything that have not been fully disclosed, the Russians know that. You know, they were part of that conversation, and they could use it.
They said that since I had involvement with the campaign, I should not be involved in any campaign investigation. I have studied the rules and considered their comments and evaluation. I believe those recommendations are right and just.
So now that Sessions has recused himself, is that more or less that? Is this over?
Oh, I doubt it. You know, the FBI is running investigations into people close to Trump being in touch with the Russians. There is intelligence collection going on. There is a Senate investigation, a House investigation. People in the Obama administration made a great effort at the end of the administration, their final days in office, to kind of spread intel around to make sure as many people could see it so that you couldn't have any kind of cover up. And there's a lot out there. And that's what's so curious about all this. It would seem that if you were in the White House, you at this point might want to call for an independent investigation just to get past all this, especially if it is the case that there's nothing to look at here. You know, and I don't want to say that there's something to look at here. We just don't know that. But it just keeps lingering on and on and on. And you kind of get the feeling, are there going to be more revelations like this? How much more of this is going to have to dribble out?
It feels like from all the intelligence that Russia's original goal was to help the Trump administration win this election. But have they now become the biggest threat to the Trump administration?
Well, I think that's something. There's something really important to keep in mind here, is that, and the Russians' biggest goal, at least if you ask people who've seen the intel, seems to have been to disrupt America, to interfere in our elections, to weaken the United States. That's the goal here. And what we've been told is they don't particularly like Trump that much. They just really disliked Hillary Clinton. You know, the kind of hacker community uses a term they call like social hacking, where you're kind of disrupting the society. And if that was the Russian goal, they seem to be doing not a terrible job at it. You know, they raised questions throughout the campaign. They've got the political elite of the country warring with each other over how to handle this Russian issue. They've got stories in the news media talking about it. I mean, if the Russians had set out to disrupt and upset America's democracy, they've certainly had some success.
Matthew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
When you think about the 2024 election, how do you feel?
Sickened.
Hey, y'all. Estelle Herndon here, host of The Run-Up from The New York Times. And recently, I've been asking this question a lot.
I feel tired. I feel a little scared.
And I've been hearing the same sort of answer in reply.
We have an incompetent incumbent and a Republican that I'm not going to vote for. Yeah.
When voters look ahead to the 2024 presidential election, they feel apathy, dread, that it's just a mess. The Run-Up is your guide to that mess. Each week,
I am going to vote for the man with the most impeachments and the most indictments.
We'll talk to voters, elected officials.
I believe America can do for anyone what she's done for me.
And the candidates themselves, all to help you better understand this moment in American politics. The Run-Up is new every Thursday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Since the election, the single most destructive force inflicting damage on the Trump White House is arguably a 66-year-old Russian diplomat who very few people outside of Washington had ever heard of, until mid-February, when Michael Flynn resigned because of a phone call with him. And now Jeff Sessions must answer for his own communication with this same man. Who is Sergei Kislyak?
Well, Sergei Kislyak is a longtime career foreign ministry diplomat, basically, for the Russians.
Peter Baker is our chief White House correspondent.
He goes back all the way to the Soviet era. He spent most of his career dealing with the United States and issues involving it. He was here in the Washington Embassy during the later part of the Reagan era, and he was also the first Russian ambassador to NATO once the Soviet Union fell apart.
You have been a reporter in Russia and in Washington for a really long time. I wonder if you've met this guy, and what is he like?
Yeah, sure. Everybody who deals with Russia issues in Washington has met Sergei Kislyak. We actually knew him, my wife and I, in Moscow when we were based there. He was the deputy foreign minister for a time. And he's, you know, he's an old school Soviet era raised Russian diplomat who has readapted himself and changed himself for the changing times in his own country. But he's always been a very, very fierce, even pugnacious advocate for Russia's policy and point of view. He's not close to Vladimir Putin, as far as we know. But for instance, when the Ukraine intervention happened, he would be out there in Washington defending it stridently, in fact, to a lot of people who thought they were close to him and friendly with him. He was not ever willing to give an apology for Russia or in any way to offer any regrets whatsoever.
Is he or was he liked by government types in Washington?
I think they respected him. You know, he's not a charmer. He's not a schmoozer, but he showed up. He would always be seen on the circuit, basically. He would go to, you know, the Center for National Interest or Brookings or, you know, all these different think tanks for their events. He would participate in the conversation, basically, that happened in the foreign policy community in Washington. I don't think he was out to win friends, exactly. I think he took the Russian point of view that respect was more important than friendship.
So that's really interesting to hear, that the experience of being the Russian ambassador in D.C. has traditionally involved a lot of kind of social life, dinner parties with D.C. types. So I guess it's not an inherently wary relationship?
Well, it is wary, but keep in mind that each of the last three presidents has at one point or another made it his mission to try to make relations with Russia better. George W. Bush did that with Putin early on. Remember, he saw into his soul. Barack Obama did that. He said he was going to have a reset. And now, obviously, we have Donald Trump, who had at least at one point aspired to a friendlier relationship with Russia that may now be politically problematic. And so during these moments of sort of thaw, during these moments of, you know, friendlier relations, obviously, it's easier for American and Russian officials to interact and to have conversations. And then, of course, something bad happens, like the intervention in Ukraine, and things fall apart again.
Is this a man who has any ties that we know of to the Russians that we believe were involved in trying to hack the 2016 presidential campaign in the United States?
Not that we know of at this point. I mean, obviously, as the ambassador of a Russian embassy in a place like Washington, you obviously are connected to all the different agencies that operate out of that embassy. The Russians, just like the Americans, run their spy agencies out of their embassies. But we don't have any particular concrete knowledge that I'm aware of tying him to the people who were directly involved in the hacking. And it's very possible in the Russian system he might not have any idea that that was happening at all, because, in fact, it is kind of an opaque system that doesn't necessarily operate according to, you know, lines of authority.
Do we know how Kislyak feels about his role in all of this?
Well, I think he's feeling a little bewildered, actually. I talked with somebody who's friendly with him just today, who says that, you know, he's feeling a little radioactive, basically. Nobody wants to return his calls in Washington. Nobody certainly wants to invite him over for dinner. All the normal diplomatic functions are a little more awkward today.
Because, I'd say.
You know, right, exactly. You're going to be questioned about it in front of Congress or on television. So to the extent that he had pretty easy access for a lot of years here in Washington to lawmakers and policymakers and think tankers and so forth, you know, that's changed a lot in the last few months. And it's kind of diminished, I think, his ability to operate. And he's already scheduled to leave Washington later this year. So I imagine that's probably not bad timing for him.
Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
The Times is reporting another previously undisclosed meeting between Kislyak and top advisors to Trump. In December, shortly after Trump's victory, the Russian diplomat met with Michael Flynn, this time in person, not by phone, and Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, at Trump Tower in New York. The point of the meeting, the White House said, was to, quote, establish a line of communication between the incoming president and the Russian government. Here's what else you need to know today. The two most powerful Democrats in Congress, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, are calling for Sessions to go a step further than recusing himself.
Because the Department of Justice should be above reproach for the good of the country, Attorney General Sessions should resign.
But by Thursday night, congressional Republicans were rallying around the Attorney General. No Republican lawmakers have called on Sessions to resign. Finally, the president has two new cabinet members, and they're both his former rivals for the Republican presidential nomination. Ben Carson, a neurosurgeon, was confirmed to run the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, was confirmed as the Secretary of Energy. Perry once argued that the Department of Energy need not exist.
My past statements, made over 5 years ago about abolishing the Department of Energy, do not reflect my current thinking. In fact, after being briefed on so many of the vital functions of the Department of Energy, I regret recommending its elimination.
The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Andy Mills, and Lisa Tobin, with support from Sam Dolnick. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Pedro Rosado is our studio manager. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. Special thanks to Michaela Bouchard in our Washington Bureau. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Monday.
Audible is the place to go to get your imagination going and your adrenaline pumping. Discover a killer lineup of audiobooks, podcasts, and originals across all the genres you love, including mysteries and thrillers, and true crime series that'll keep you guessing. Enjoy the latest bestsellers, debut releases, plus thousands of included titles. You'll always find something new to listen to, and it's all in one place on Audible. Investigate for yourself. Sign up for a free 30-day trial at audible.com/thedaily.